water stress, and conflict. In all of these cases, the rising water stress, combined with other pressures, will worsen food security. Crop failures due to drought are likely to become much more frequent. Farm households will not only lose their food supplies, but their livelihoods as well. At least in the poorer regions, water stress can end up in war. Indeed, there is a powerful and disturbing overlap between dryland regions and the onset of violence. That is not just an environmentalist's worst nightmare, but the grim record of recent years. A notable scientific contribution in establishing this link was made by Edward Miguel and his colleagues, who found that drops in rainfall in Africa are associated with significantly more conflict. There is strong evidence that better rainfall makes conflict much less likely in Africa. The key link seems to be that a declining rainfall causes the economy to shrink, presumably through the adverse effects on harvests and food supply, and this in turn triggers conflict. What is more important is that when the authors compare the explanatory power of rainfall with political variables, such as democracy, ethnic cleavages, religious divisions, colonial heritage, in accounting for the location and timing of conflicts in Africa, the rainfall variable was more important than the political variables. The research team concluded as follows. The most obvious reading of these findings is that economic factors trump all others in causing African civil conflicts, and that institutional and political characteristics have much less of an impact. The role of extreme water stress is evident in Darfur, Sudan, which has experienced a sizable drop in rainfall during the past 30 years, combined with a massive rise in population. This combination has added to a lethal brew of extreme poverty, ethnic clashes, and other contributing factors. We will return to the Darfur crisis in Chapter 10. Water scarcity is, so far, mainly responsible for conflicts within countries rather than between them. Yet cross-border confrontations will also become more likely to arise as water stress becomes more extreme. As Fred Pierce reminds us, all told, more than 20 nations get more than half of their water from their neighbors. Many should by rights get more than they do. Mexico receives virtually none of the flow of the Colorado River out of the United States. Most of the water of the Jordan River disappears within Israel and never reaches the country named after it. The Ile has shrunk by two-thirds by the time it leaves China for Kazakhstan. The Karkhe, flowing west out of Iran, rarely makes it to Iraq anymore. Iran, meanwhile, has rarely seen the Helmand flow west over the border from Afghanistan since the 1990s. Given the extent of the damage caused by such disruption to the natural river flows, it is perhaps a wonder that there have not been more out-and-out wars. It is extremely important that diplomats working to bring peace to conflict zones, such as Darfur, Sudan, and Somalia, and to prevent tensions in other dryland regions from erupting into full-scale conflict, should understand and address the ecological underpinnings contributing to the stress in the regions. One of the most important interventions, ensuring predictable and adequate access to water for human use and agriculture, is frequently overlooked in conflict avoidance and peacemaking. A framework for action. There is no single remedy for the rising water stress and rainfall instability. Countries need to develop holistic plans of action and will need international support to implement them. Plans should address the following five areas: safe drinking water and sanitation for all, increased water efficiency in agriculture, including the development of drought-resistant seed varieties and new irrigation strategies, increased attention to droughts through improved water storage, reduced economic risks through rainfall insurance, economic diversification and international trade to reduce the dependency of livelihoods on rainfall. Let's consider each of these, and then turn to the kinds of global cooperation that can make a difference. We should also underscore that every one of these challenges will be easier to meet if the country is also making overall progress in the fight against extreme poverty and is taking action to reduce high population growth rates through voluntary reductions of fertility.